Hanium, number 16. The time of the end.
Daniel 11 begins by introducing Donald Trump as the final president of the sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy. In the third year of Cyrus, which is where the vision began in chapter 10, is complemented in the first verse of chapter 11 with the word, also.
Also, I, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I, stood to confirm and to strengthen him. Daniel 11 verse 1.
Gabriel is careful to reach back to Darius and connect him to Cyrus as he begins his narrative of chapter 11. Chapter 10 continues as one vision through to the last verse of chapter 12, and it begins in the third year of Cyrus.
In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. And the thing was true, but the time appointed was long. And he understood the thing, and had understanding of the vision.
Daniel 10 verse 1. Darius together with Cyrus make up the symbol of the twofold nation of the Medes and the Persians, representing the twofold power of republicanism and Protestantism in the United States, thus representing the twofold symbol of the time of the end. The birth of Aaron and Moses marked the time of the end of Abraham's 400-year prophecy at the beginning of ancient Israel. So too, did the birth of John the Baptist and Christ represent the two waymarks of the time of the end at the end of ancient Israel. Jesus always illustrates the end with the beginning. Darius and Cyrus together represent the waymark represented as the time of the end, when the 70 years captivity in Babylon ended.
God's church on earth was as barely in captivity during this long period of relentless persecution as were the children of Israel held captive in Babylon during the period of the exile. Prophets and Kings 7:14.
Darius and Cyrus typify the years 1798 and 1799, representing the time of the end, when the parallel captivity of spiritual Israel and spiritual Babylon ended. 1798 identified the end of the political system of the papacy represented as a beast, which the whore of Rome rode upon.
So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns.
Revelation 17, verse 3. Napoleon ended the life of the beast in 1798, and in 1799, the woman that rode upon the beast died in exile. In 1989, both Ronald Reagan and George Bush the Greater were presidents, marking the time of the end in 1989. Darius and Cyrus represent Reagan and Bush the Greater. Verse 2 states,
and now will I shew thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength through his riches he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia.
Daniel 11 verse 2.
Awakening.
Darius was Reagan, Cyrus was Bush the Greater, and the three who followed Cyrus were Clinton, Bush the Lesser, Obama the Divider, and the fourth and far richer president, who stirred up the globalists of Grecia was Trump. The word stir means to awaken. When Trump announced his candidacy in 2015, the globalists, who Joel identifies as heathen, were awakened.
Let the heathen be wakened, and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full. The fats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. Joel 3 verses 12 to 14.
When the heathen is awakened, the day of the Lord is near in the valley of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat means judgment of Jehovah, and the valley is also called the valley of decision. From 2015 onward, the multitudes of planet Earth will begin to move into the various bundles prepared for each excuse given by men for not deciding to serve God. At 9/11, the judgment of the living began, and in 2015, Trump announced he would seek the presidency. At 9/11, the first phase of the latter rain began to fall, and the latter rain is what brings to fruition the crop. And in 2015, 14 years into the rain that produces the ripened harvest, The Book of Joel sounds the warning that when Donald Trump stirs up the realm of Grecia, or as Joel says, when Trump awakens the heathen in 2015, the harvest of planet Earth is beginning to ripen. It is important to recognize that the first truth mentioned in Daniel 11 is the prophetic role of Donald Trump. The first kingdom of Bible prophecy represented in the Book of Daniel is Babylon. Imagine the story of Babylon in the Book of Daniel if Nebuchadnezzar was not employed by inspiration to establish a prophetic model. The sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy is incomplete without the testimony of the final ruler of that kingdom. The rule of first mention establishes the significance of Trump as a symbol of primary importance in the vision which Daniel received on the 22nd day after he fasted for 3 weeks.
But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 1 and 20 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people in the latter days. For yet the vision is for many days.
Daniel 10 verses 13 and 14. The vision of chapter 11 illustrates what befalls God's people in the last days. And Trump as the leader of the United States, and thereafter of the United Nations, is a truth that has eternal consequences connected to understanding or not understanding that truth. That truth was so important for Gabriel to convey to Daniel that in verse 14, Daniel records from the light provided by the angel Gabriel that it is the robbers of thy people who established the vision. It is impossible to correctly follow the movements of Donald Trump in prophecy without using Rome as the blueprint to recognize Trump's footsteps through the prophetic history of Daniel 11. Trump, as a symbol of the United States during the Sunday law time period, forms an image of the beast, and in so doing he is honoring the beast, so it is an image of the beast, and also an image in honor of the beast. In Revelation 17, the papacy is the eighth, that is of the seven, and Donald Trump is the eighth president since Reagan at the time of the end in 1989, but he is also the sixth, which means he is the eighth, that is, of the seven. In Revelation 17, John in verse 3 is carried into the wilderness where he sees the whore riding upon a beast. The whore has been identified by every major Protestant denomination as the Catholic Church, though they all deny their foundational beliefs in the latter days. The Roman Church was drunken with the blood of martyrs when John saw her, and she bore the title of Mother of Harlots. This identifies that John was conveyed to 1798, where the papacy had the blood of martyrdom and some former Protestant churches were already returning to the Roman Catholic Communion. At that vantage point, John saw seven kings, five of which already fallen in 1798, and one kingdom existed in 1798, and that kingdom was the United States. But another kingdom, made up of 10 kings, would come after, for in 1798, where John stood, the seventh kingdom had not yet came. The 10 kings rule for the hour of the Sunday law crisis, and they agree to give their seventh kingdom unto the beast of the fifth kingdom, who had received a deadly wound in 1798. The number 8 represents resurrection, and the papacy is the 8, that is of the 7, when its deadly wound is healed at the threefold union of the dragon, the beast, and false prophet that occurs at the soon coming Sunday law. In 2020, the globalists stole the election from Trump, and he was slain in the streets of Revelation 11. The two witnesses of Revelation 11 represent the two horns of the earth beast who were both slain in 2020. Trump is the sixth president since Reagan at the time of the end in 1989, but as of 2024, he is also the eighth, that is, of the seven previous kings. In 2024, his deadly wound was healed, and he simultaneously became the eighth, that is, of the seven, in perfect alignment with the prophetic symbol that establishes the vision. If you have no Rome, you have no ability to follow the movements of the image of Rome.
Mega.
To understand how Trump is Constantine the Great when Nero's 250 years conclude, or how he is Antiochus the Great in 207 BC, or how he is the last president whose whole Golden Age movement is premised on making America great, requires the recognition that the chapter first mentions Trump and his prophetic role. The signature of truth represented by the Hebrew word truth that is made up of the first, 13th, and 22nd letter of the Hebrew alphabet identifies Reagan as the first letter, and Obama as the 13th letter of rebellion as represented by 2013, when the former leader of the Office of the Inquisition was followed by the first Jesuit Pope. Because the leader of the Inquisition retired, his ending point aligns with the Jesuit Pope's starting point. That connection between Obama's two popes was March 13, 2013. Obama aligns with the 13th letter of rebellion, and the 22nd letter is Trump. The 22nd Amendment limits a president to two terms. And when considering two-term presidents, whose terms were not consecutive, there are only two. Grover Cleveland is the alpha of two-term presidents with non-consecutive terms, and Trump is the omega. Grover Cleveland was the 22nd president, and Trump as the omega to Cleveland possesses the alpha distinction of 22. Cleveland and Trump represent an alpha and omega that contains the symbolism of the 22nd letter in the Hebrew alphabet. There are only two presidents that had two non-consecutive terms, and Trump is the second of those two. The 2 of the omega times the 22 of the alpha equals 44, a symbol of 1844, which is a symbol of the closed door at the Sunday law, as typified by the closed door of 1844. Trump is the 44th distinct person to be president, and he is president when the door closes at the Sunday law. Trump has been typified by Cyrus the Great. Cyrus the Great set forth the first decree, and Artaxerxes the Great set forth the third decree. The first and third align with each other, for Jesus always illustrates the end with the beginning. Trump is there when Nero's 250 years end, represented by Constantine the Great. At the end of the 250 years from 457 BC, Trump is represented by Antiochus the Great, who returns stronger than before in 2024, in fulfillment of verse 13.
For the king of the north shall return, and shall set forth a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come after certain years with a great army and with much riches. Daniel 11 verse 13.
When the United States is conquered by Rome at the Sunday law, every country in the world is then forced to bow to Rome.
Foreign nations will follow the example of the United States. Though she leads out, yet the same crisis will come upon our people in all parts of the world. Testimonies, Volume 6, 395.
The foreign nations are forced to do so by the United States, who assumes leadership of the United Nations at the soon-coming Sunday law. The United Nations is the 10 kings of Revelation 17 who are ruled over by Ahab, king of the 10 northern tribes, who is married to Jezebel. The marriage of Jezebel to Ahab is the marriage that is consummated at the soon-coming Sunday law. At the Sunday law, the United States, the glorious land of Daniel 11, and the earth beast of Revelation 13 ends its history as the sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy. At Mount Carmel, the 850 prophets of Baal and the priests of the grove who ate at Jezebel's table are slain by Elijah. The United States is slain at the soon-coming Sunday law, as were the false prophets at Mount Carmel. The story from then on is between Elijah versus Ahab and Jezebel, and Ahab represents a tenfold kingdom that is governed by the one that first committed fornication with Jezebel. Jezebel intends to commit fornication with every kingdom, but Ahab represents the first to do so, and it is the United States that dies at Mount Carmel and instantly becomes Jezebel's first paramour. In terms of Daniel 11, it is there at the Sunday law that Trump stands up as the mighty king of Greece, represented by Alexander the Great.
And a mighty king shall stand up, that shall rule with great dominion, and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken, and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven, and not to his posterity, nor according to his dominion which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be plucked up, even for others beside those. Daniel 11 verses 3 and 4.
Donald Trump stands up as the mighty king of the United Nations, who is represented within the verse and thereafter typified by the history of Alexander the Great. When he stands up, the United States, the sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy ends, and the seventh kingdom of 10 kings in Revelation 17 begins. The 10 kings begin their seventh kingdom by agreeing there, and then to give their seventh kingdom unto the papal power, who is the eighth kingdom, that is of the seven previous kingdoms. Their agreement was to fulfill God's will, and his will is represented line upon line throughout the scriptures of truth.
Typifying Rome.
Verses 5 through 9 of Daniel 11 were fulfilled with a prophetic history that perfectly typified the history of the papal power as set forth in verses 31 through 40 of the same chapter. The line of history in verses 5 through 9 parallel the line of history in verses 31 through verse 40. Both lines identify a period that the power representing papal Rome first overcame three obstacles, ruled for a period until there was a broken treaty that brought a southern king upon them that delivered a deadly wound. The more closely those two lines are studied and compared to history, the more profoundly accurate they are recognized to be. Their accuracy is in regards to how closely they represent the structure within the verses and also the history which fulfilled the verses. The history that fulfilled the five verses parallels and aligns with the history of papal Rome set forth in verses 31 through 40 and provide the setting for the introduction of Antiochus the Great in verses 10 through 15.
But his sons shall be stirred up and shall assemble a multitude of great forces, and one shall certainly come and overflow and pass through. Then shall he return and be stirred up even to his fortress.
Daniel 11 verse 10. In fulfillment of verse 10, Antiochus the Great was victorious all the way up to the fortress of Egypt, where he ended the campaign in order to regroup. That history typifies the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1989, as represented in verse 40 of the same chapter.
And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over.
Daniel 11 verse 40. Verse 10's shall certainly come and overflow and pass through is identical in Hebrew to verse 40's he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. Both verses are identifying when the king of the north, Antiochus in verse 10 and Reagan in verse 40, defeat the king of the south, Ptolemy in verse 10 and the Soviet Union in verse 40. Both attacks were retaliatory against the king of the south's prior victory, Ptolemy in verses 5 through 9 and Napoleon in verse 40. The southern king's motivation for attack was a broken treaty, the marriage of Bernice in verses 5 through 9 and the broken treaty of Tolentino of 1797 with Napoleon. The prophetic structure represented within the verses and the verses' subsequent fulfillment in history also aligns with Isaiah 8 verse 8.
And he shall pass through Judah. He shall overflow and go over. He shall reach even to the neck. And the stretching out of his wings shall fill the breadth of thy land, O Emmanuel.
Isaiah 8 verse 8. When Isaiah predicts that Sennacherib's army shall overflow and go over, it is once again the same Hebrew as in verse 10 and 40. Isaiah identifies when Sennacherib, the northern kingdom, conquered the southern kingdom of Judah, but he left Jerusalem standing, for he only reached to the neck, just as Antiochus reached to the border in verse 10. Sennacherib's motivation was that Hezekiah had broken the treaty with Assyria, as represented by Hezekiah ceasing the agreed upon tribute. The broken treaty is the anomaly to the three parallel verses. They each involved a broken treaty, but with Ptolemy and Napoleon, the northern king was charged with breaking the treaty. Sennacherib, the northern king, charged Hezekiah with refusing the allotted tribute.
Now in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, did Sennacherib king of Assyria come up against all the fenced cities of Judah and took them. And Hezekiah king of Judah sent to the king of Assyria to Lachish, saying, I have offended, return from me, that which thou puttiest on me will I bear. And the king of Assyria appointed unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. And Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasures of the king's house.
2 Kings 18 verses 13 to 15. Sennacherib's northern army captured 46 Judean cities on his march to Jerusalem. It is of great prophetic significance that Isaiah 8 verse 8 connects with verses 10 and 40. Thus, providing a third witness of the collapse of the Southern Kingdom of the Soviet Union in 1989. That collapse marks the beginning of a period of verse 40 that is empty. From the fulfillment of verse 40 in 1989 unto verse 41, which represents the soon coming Sunday law, there is an empty period in verse 40. That period begins at 1989 and ends at the Sunday law. Verse 40 has nothing to say of that period of time, but verse 40 can be understood with the methodology of line upon line. A primary key to establish the hidden history of verse 40 is Isaiah's witness of the victorious retaliatory war of the Northern Kingdom against the Southern Kingdom. Whether it is the rebellion of Hezekiah ceasing to honor the previous commitment to provide tribute to Assyria, or the setting aside of Bernice by Antiochus, or Napoleon's Treaty of Tolentino, all three verses were fulfilled by histories that emphasize a broken treaty as an underlying motivation for attacking. During the Obama presidency, under the State Department of John Kerry, the Assistant Secretary Victoria Nuland brought about a color revolution to overthrow the government of the Ukraine. From that point on, two sides of one argument exist about the Ukrainian war. Putin says it was a broken treaty, and his opponents say the treaty Putin points to never existed in the context Putin claims. Whether a treaty was actually made and then broken, or vice versa, matters not, for the prophetic record simply records a broken treaty as motivation for war. Isaiah 8 verse 8 provides the key to see that the northern king only conquers up to the neck, or up to the head. That key identifies Russia as the head that was left standing after the collapse of the body in 1989. Verse 8's prophetic importance is not only found in the key of identifying the head, but its identification of the neck representing the head, or the capital city, can only be established in connection with a previous passage of the same vision of Isaiah 8. That vision begins in chapter 7, and in verses 7 and 8, a head is defined as a king, or his kingdom, or the capital city of a kingdom. Jerusalem was the capital of Judah, whose 46 cities were conquered by Sennacherib's army, but Sennacherib left the capital city of Jerusalem standing.
For the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. And within 65 years shall Ephraim be broken, that it be not a people. And the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Remaliah's son. If you will not believe, surely ye shall not be established. Isaiah 7 verses 8 and 9.
When Sennacherib's army came to the walls of Jerusalem in 701 BC, he came up to the neck, and in so doing, he left an historical witness of Russia remaining after the 1989 collapse. As Antiochus the Great began his retaliation against the Southern Kingdom, he came in verse 10 to the border of Egypt, but did not enter. What is significant in the victory of Antiochus in verse 10 is that it marks the conclusion of a military campaign by Antiochus that lacked a distinct battle, but represents his work in re-establishing previously lost geography. His conquering in verse 10 represents the conclusion of several victories. He ended the campaign of the Fourth Syrian War at Raphia, which means borderland, and Raphia was the border, or neck of Egypt. Antiochus's campaign of 219 BC to 217 BC represents the overflowing and passing over of the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1989 unto 1991, when the king passed over the countries. Prophetically, Isaiah 8 verse 8 allows Russia, as the neck in Sennacherib's battle, or the fortress in Antiochus's, to be identified as the king of the south at the Battle of Raphia, as represented by the fulfillment of verse 11. In doing so, it directly connects the external history represented by the dragon, king of the south, the beast, the king of the north, and the false prophet, the king of the north's proxy power, with the internal line of prophecy as represented by the 65-year prophecy of verse 7 of chapter 7. Prophetically, the significance of Sennacherib coming up to Jerusalem provides one of the most powerful prophetic testimonies of God's power in the scriptures, as God there destroyed Sennacherib's army of 185,000 men in one night. The day before, on the wall of Jerusalem was both Eliakim and Shebna, the symbols of Laodicean and Philadelphian Adventism, who are marked at the closed door of 1844 and the closed door of the Sunday law.
Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, that Sennacherib king of Assyria came up against all the defensed cities of Judah, and took them. And the king of Assyria sent Rabshake from Lachish to Jerusalem unto King Hezekiah with a great army. And he stood by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field. Then came forth unto him Eliakim, Hilkiah's son, which was over the house, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah, Asaph's son, the recorder. Isaiah 36 verses 1 to 3.
In Isaiah chapter 7, Isaiah is sent with a message to wicked Ahaz, the king of Judah, the southern kingdom. It is that kingdom who Sennacherib is attacking in chapter 8, verse 8. When Isaiah meets wicked King Ahaz, he meets him by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field, which is right where Rabshake blasphemes the name of the Lord. Isaiah taught that he and his children were signs.
Behold, I and the children whom the Lord hath given me are for signs and for wonders in Israel from the Lord of hosts, which dwelleth in Mount Zion.
Isaiah 8 verse 18. When Isaiah met wicked King Ahaz by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field, Isaiah had brought his son Shearjashub, which means a remnant shall return.
Then said the Lord unto Isaiah, Go forth now to meet Ahaz, thou, and Shearjashub thy son, at the end of the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field.
Isaiah 7 verse 3. Shearjashub identifies that the message proclaimed by Isaiah at the end of the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field is a message identifying the remnant who return. That remnant is those in the book of Malachi who are called to test the Lord by returning unto him, and by returning the tithes into the storehouse. Those who return are also represented by Jeremiah as those who return after the first disappointment. In chapter 7, the end of the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field portrays Isaiah giving a message to a wicked southern king, and in Isaiah 36, Eliakim, Shebna, and Joah the recorder interacted for Hezekiah, while Rabshake represented Sennacherib. The first message of the end of the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field is proclaimed by Isaiah and his son. The last message of the end of the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field was proclaimed by three persons. The first message was to an internal king, and the second was to an external king. The dividing line is the wall, which is a symbol of God's law, and the Sunday law that represents the removal of the wall of separation of church and state. At the Sunday law, or at the wall, there are three symbols. Eliakim is Philadelphia, Shebna is Laodicea, and Joab the recorder is Sardis. At the Sunday law, many are overthrown according to Daniel 11:41, and those persons are those who are held accountable for the light upon the seventh-day Sabbath. Those who are overthrown in verse 41 are Laodicean Seventh-day Adventists, and Eliakim represents Philadelphia.
And it shall come to pass in that day that I will call my servant Eliakim the son of Hilkiah, and I will clothe him with thy robe, and strengthen him with thy girdle, and I will commit thy government into his hand. And he shall be a father to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. And the key of the house of David will I lay upon his shoulder. So he shall open, and none shall shut, and he shall shut, and none shall open. Isaiah 22 verses 20 to 22. And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, These things saith he that is holy, he that is true, he that hath the key of David, he that openeth, and no man shutteth, and no man openeth. I know thy works. Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. For thou hast a little strength, and hast kept my word, and hast not denied my name. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews, and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet, and to know that I have loved thee. Revelation 3 verses 7 to 9.
Shebna is replaced by Eliakim, and Shebna on the wall represents Laodicean Seventh-day Adventists who refuse to be benefited by the message of the early or latter rain. The early reign with the church was represented by Isaiah and the remnant who returned, and the message was directed at an apostate church, represented by wicked King Ahaz. The message from the wall was given to a wicked king of the north that was seeking to defeat Jerusalem, and it represents the latter reign in relation to the early reign. While God's church is judged the early or former rain sprinkles, but at the Sunday law the rain is poured out without measure. The message to Ahaz was the internal message. The message to Sennacherib was external. The first voice of Revelation 18 verses 1 to 3 is a repetition of the second angel's message, and it is internal. The second voice of Revelation 18 verse 4 is external and is the third message. Isaiah and his son brought the internal second angel's message, and on the wall with an external message there are three souls. Eliakim is the 144,000. Shebna is Laodicean Seventh-day Adventism that is spewed out of the mouth of the Lord at that time. Joab the recorder represents God's other flock who record the history leading up to the wall, in order to recognize the ensign of Eliakim when it is lifted up. Isaiah 8 verse 8 brings the messages of Isaiah 6 through 12 into Daniel 11 verse 10. In doing so, it provides a second witness that the head of the kingdom is left standing after the attack. It identifies an argument of a broken treaty that is used to precipitate a battle. From the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1989, in verse 40, until the soon coming Sunday law represented in the next verse, there is 37 years of prophetic history that verse 40 says nothing. Verses 10 through 15 of Daniel 11 represents the prophetic history that is not addressed in verse 40. It can only be seen when employing the methodology of line upon line. If ye will not believe, surely ye shall not be established, is the prophetic warning that is attached to the three verses that describe 1989, and the historical fulfillment of verse 8 of Isaiah 8 portrays a test for Eliakim and Shebna. Can you see, or are you blind? Verse 41 of Daniel 11 is the soon coming Sunday law in the United States that is typified by the history that fulfilled verse 16.
But he that cometh against him shall do according to his own will, and none shall stand before him. And he shall stand in the glorious land, which by his hand shall be consumed. Daniel 11 verse 16. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. Daniel 11 verse 41.
The historical fulfillment of verse 16 on through to verse 30 in Daniel 11 is the history of pagan Rome. Every prophetic line in Daniel chapter 11 either typifies the history of pagan, papal, or modern Rome. Every line either directly identifies a Roman history or typifies a future Roman history. Every line. The verses that directly refer to the history fulfilled by pagan Rome typify papal Rome. Together, pagan Rome and papal Rome testify of modern Rome. Rome establishes the vision, for from the beginning of the chapter unto the end the vision is about Rome. Jesus identified that there was a traitor for the purpose of helping his disciples believe when the betrayal of Judas was made manifest.
In pronouncing the woe upon Judas, Christ also had a purpose of mercy toward his disciples. He thus gave them the crowning evidence of his messiahship. I tell you before it come, he said, that, when it has come to pass, ye may believe that I am. Had Jesus remained silent, in apparent ignorance of what was to come upon him, the disciples might have thought that their master had not divine foresight, and had been surprised and betrayed into the hands of the murderous mob. A year before, Jesus had told the disciples that he had chosen 12, and that one was a devil. Now his words to Judas, showing that his treachery was fully known to his master, would strengthen the faith of Christ's true followers during his humiliation. And when Judas should have come to his dreadful end, they would remember the woe that Jesus had pronounced upon the betrayer. The Desire of Ages, 655.
December 31, 2023, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah began to unseal the revelation of himself, and the foundational test began. The test was over whether Rome was still the symbol that established the vision in verse 14, or had things changed. When the first Antichrist from the United States began to reign on May 8, 2025, verse 14, had been fulfilled. It could then be seen that the relationship between Trump and Pope Leo had been typified by Reagan and John Paul II. The Ukrainian War, which began in 2014, when the State Department of the United States brought about a color revolution in the Ukraine, occurred in the presidency of Obama, who reigned during two popes, Reagan and John Paul II in verse 10, and then in 2014, the Ukrainian War began as represented by verse 11's Battle of the Borderland, or the Battle of Rafia. Rafia means borderland, and so does the word Ukraine. In that history, Obama and two popes marked the second battle of the three battles of verses 10 through 15. Then in 2024, Trump returned in fulfillment of verse 13. Then in verse 14, the vision is established by the arrival of Trump's popish counterpart. What was established is that the three battles of verses 10 through 15 represent three waymarks that each identify the relationship between Jezebel and Ahab, leading to Mount Carmel at the Sunday Law. With Reagan, Jezebel was in Samaria, hidden by a secret alliance. Then the priests of Baal and the prophets of the Grove lifted up the spiritualism of woke liberal Catholicism, combined with Obama's schizophrenic symbolism of both the false prophet of apostate Protestantism and the false prophet of Islam, the worship of Mother Earth, the licentiousness and anarchy of the French Revolution. Then Trump returned in 2024, and the open relationship between the beast and its image was made manifest in 2025. It's 2026, and the external vision test of the foundation has passed, and we are now in the vision of the temple test. Verse 11 was fulfilled at the Battle of Rafia in 217 BC, and typifies the Ukrainian War that began in 2014, which escalated in 2022, and is now on the verge of concluding. Putin will prevail, but the victory simply introduces the beginning of his demise. The prophetic structure of verse 11 and its historical fulfillment at Ptolemy's victory at the Battle of Rafia in 217 BC in fulfillment of verse 11 of chapter 11 aligns with the prophetic history of King Uzziah. Both Ptolemy and Uzziah were southern kings whose hearts were lifted up because of military successes, but their lifted up hearts brought both of them down, and the demise of both is associated with mutual attempts to make an offering in the sanctuary in Jerusalem. We will continue to consider the demise of Putin that leads into the Battle of Panium in verse 15 in the next article.